Hi, I'm Max, and I work as an assistant psychologist in the Learning Disability Service in West Yorkshire. Like most people working in psychology, I'm slowly but surely working myself up to that seemingly impossible goal of getting onto the clinical doctorate. With that end goal in mind, I thought I'd have a look at what's out there and see what books might be helpful for this. I came across Marianne's book, The Clinical Psychologist Collective, and decided that this would be a great buy for me to help me on my journey. I found Marianne's book really informative, most insightful. I especially liked how the stories reassured me that you don't need to be academically perfect to become a psychologist, and that as long as you have good interpersonal skills, such as compassion and empathy, you will get there. I would highly recommend this book to all aspiring psychologists, and also those who want to know a bit more about the world of clinical psychology, and maybe want to work in that field one day.
Get ready as we dive into the fascinating world of psychology with a Celtic twist. We are going on a cross-country road trip as we compare and contrast how Ireland and the UK train and qualify their counselling psychologists. But that's not all. We're also spilling the Barry's tea on how you can or cannot travel and work internationally once you're a qualified psychologist. So grab your favourite cuppa, stay tuned, and I hope you find this really useful. Hi, welcome along to the Aspiring Psychologist podcast. My name is Dr. Marianne Trent, and I'm a qualified clinical psychologist. Thank you so much for choosing me to help you learn more about the world of psychology and mental health. Do please come along and download my free guide for the DClinSci, which is a doctorate in clinical psychology, which also includes lots of useful tips and guidance for anyone embarking on professional psychology applications. You can do that by coming along to my website, www.goodthinkingpsychology.co.uk, and then check out the free resources option. You can also click any of the links in my show notes or any of the links in my social media. Come and follow me everywhere. I'm Dr. Marianne Trent. Let's dive in and meet our guest for today. Hi, I just want to welcome our guest for today, Dr. Leora de Flumery. Hi.
Hi, it's so good to be here this morning. How are you, Marianne?
I'm really well, thank you. So thank you for connecting with me. We connected on Instagram this time, didn't we? And we got to chatting in the DMs about whether a podcast episode might be really interesting. And I think it will be. So we're going to be talking about kind of all things today, but qualifying and training in Ireland, living and working in Ireland. But also, I think you said originally that you were born in America and then moved over.
Yeah.
The States to Ireland. So we're going to kind of talk about that, and we're going to talk about individual differences between what we think might be the Irish program for counselling psychology and the UK program. And I thought it was about time we did an episode with someone based in Ireland who is working there, because actually my second biggest audience for the podcast is in Ireland. So delighted to have you here.
I'm delighted to be here. And I'm not surprised that it is the second largest audience. There is so much overlap between people who are qualifying in Ireland and the UK. We go back and forth a fair bit.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, one of the first differences I've noticed already is that you mentioned in our pre-chat about the HSE. Could you tell us a little bit about the HSE and how that differs from the NHS, if indeed it does?
Great question. So I am not an expert, I suppose, in the HSE. I work in private practice at the moment. I did complete my placements during my training, primarily within the HSE, actually all within the HSE. So my placements were in adult mental health and primary care for children, adolescents, families, all that stuff, and also some assessment work in there. And then my third year placement was in psycho-oncology in a HSC hospital. The reason why I paused there is because it wasn't kind of your typical psychologist training practicum or placement opportunity, but it was in a HSC hospital. So it was more an acute hospital treatment setting. So the difference is, I have not worked in the NHS. I do not know a whole lot about it. In the HSC, I just have my placement experiences. So the HSC is, it takes an MDT approach. I'll just outline kind of what I'm aware of about the HSC, and you let me know where the differences are, I suppose. We take an MDT approach. It is psychiatrist-led. That's slowly changing, where psychologists are taking on a little bit more leadership within each team. Every team is going to have an occupational therapist. It's going to have an SLT. It's going to have all those people in the allied health services that are working together under the leadership of a psychiatrist. Is it psychiatrist-led within the NHS typically, or do psychologists lead psychological teams? Because I've wondered that.
It tends to be. So it has traditionally been that way, but it is changing. And there are some psychology-led teams or even nurse-led teams, you know. So, mm-hmm. But generally speaking, in the most part, certainly in inpatient units, I would say in the most part, it's still psychiatry-led, but not exclusively.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think about other potential differences that there might be. The differences for the people who are going to be listening to this podcast, I suppose, would be that recently counselling psychologists have received funding from the HSE. So that means that you're paid a salary as you would be for clinical psychology training programmes in both the UK and in Ireland. Basically what that means is that you are supposed to work for the HSE as a counselling psychologist and as a clinical psychologist in those first couple of years post-qualification, which I believe is the same in the UK. That there is kind of an expectation that you might work within a public health service?
There isn't actually. So when you do your training in clinical psychology, they're offering you a fixed term period of employment as a trainee clinical psychologist, but there's no prerequisite that you must work in the NHS post-qualification. Obviously, mm-hmm. they are hoping you will, but certainly in my case, when I qualified in 2011, there were no jobs available. And so I was unemployed for a period of time. And so whilst that has changed now, and now usually people are getting jobs even when they're in their last year of training, you know, it was bleak times. And it was like I did do a little bit of kind of, you know, research work and stuff for myself. But, you know, I was fortunate I was able to get an NHS role, but there's no, you're not contracted to say that I will work for this period of time. I wonder if that might change ultimately, because as private practice becomes more and more popular and more and more viable, and people think about the work-life balance that's perhaps afforded from doing that, I wonder if that will change. But currently, that's not the case.
So in Ireland, there would be kind of the expectation for clinical psychology, clinical psychologists, once you complete your program, that you would be working for the HSE for a little bit. I'm not a clinical psychologist, so I haven't looked at the contracts. I don't know whether that's pressure that people kind of fall into, and people don't want to step on toes, or whether it is actually contractually obligated. Counselling psychology trainees have only received funding in the past 6 months to a year. Prior to that, it was entirely self-funded doctoral programmes. It was, like in the UK, incredibly competitive to get into these training programmes. We're talking, I think that the numbers were, there were 480 applicants the year that I applied to about 45 to 50 slots available around the country in clinical training programmes. For the counselling training programme, I think that it was 150 applicants for my cohort, which took in 14. So again, it's similarly competitive. There are similar expectations, to my understanding, of working in relevant settings beforehand. And then you're put on this 3-year professional doctoral training program. Within the counselling doctoral program, you're expected to do a research PhD level piece of research. So you're held to like the proper VIVA. It's not that you're doing a doctoral service project. You're doing a full dissertation, which would be a difference, I suppose, between the counselling psychology doctorate and the clinical psychology doctorate, to my understanding here. I hope that answers some questions, at least. There are lots of differences.
Yeah, I mean, the one that will be very exciting for our listeners if they're based in the UK is the idea that actually you guys have managed to secure paid funding for counselling. So I'd imagine that the rates of applicants will go up considerably now in Ireland for counselling, because I don't know why this has perpetuated in the UK. It doesn't seem fair. For me, they're often advertising qualified band 7 clinical or counselling psychologists. You know, they're essentially saying it's fine. You know, you can do the same job. So why the inequity? It's not right.
To my understanding, so there's been a lot of work behind the scenes here in Ireland to secure that funding for the past, honestly, 15, 20 years going on. To my understanding, there is an understanding within the healthcare providers that our trainings are so comparable. You and I were even discussing in our pre-chat there that in Ireland, it sounds like counselling psychologists receive even more similar training to clinical psychologists than counselling psychologists would in the UK, where we receive placement opportunities from childhood all the way up through adulthood. We're encouraged to take on older adult placements. We have a multitude of placements. Some people do ID placements. You really receive comparable training. But from my understanding, it's that HR hasn't really understood that the two programs are similar, genuinely. Like, I've heard that there is just this delay in being, oh, wait, do have a lack of qualified providers who can actually help people with their mental health. And we have this entirely untapped group of psychologists who are coming out every year. We only got that funding recently. So that means that many of us would go into more private sector work if you did qualify before this group, this cohort that's just starting in now. That being said, many counselling psychologists work in the public health service. Of my friends, the majority are working in the HSE. A couple are working in the Irish Prison Service. There's incredible work happening within the Irish Prison Service that counselling psychologists are specifically well suited to perform, in my opinion, but also a lot of people in private work like myself.
It's just really interesting. It's really useful. And it almost seems like Ireland get it more than, you know, than the UK do at the moment. So I think, you know, certainly some of the work that one of my colleagues, Dr. Tara Quinciarillo, is doing, she's absolutely demonstrating her capabilities as a qualified counselling psychologist. She does lots of work in the media. But I think even in our disciplines, as a clinical psychologist, it's only really in the last few years we've realised how similar they are.
Yeah.
Can I ask what might feel like quite a naive question? So in the NHS, you know, you in essence get free at the point of delivery healthcare from cradle to grave. Mm-hmm. Is that the same with the HSE?
That's the promise. Is it the delivery? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So there's not. It's funded by taxpayers in the same way as the NHS, is it?
Yes. You have access in terms of mental health care. You have access to public mental health care your whole life. That being said, waiting lists are very, very tricky and very long comparably. I think in Wexford, so I'm in Wicklow, which is just south of Dublin. Wexford is just the county south of that. Wexford had very, very long waiting lists last year. I think that we're talking like 18-month to 2-year waiting lists for child's mental health service. And obviously people do age out then, and it gets quite tricky in terms of assessments, in terms of assessment of needs. Does somebody need to go for specific assessments? It gets really tricky quite quickly. So yes, that's the promise.
Okay. And is HSE only mental health care, or do they do broken legs?
No,
and...
no. It's everything. It's everything.
Okay.
The HSE is the health body for everything. So it's mental health care, it's physical health care, it's cancer care, it's everything. Yeah. But you also can opt into the private sector. You can opt into the private sector for all of those services as well, which is the same in the UK.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Just in case our listeners, obviously we're in Ireland, you absolutely get this. But, you know, I think part of my role as, you know, a mental health and psychology advocate is to help illuminate what's happening just over that small patch of water. And, you know, I find it baffling, really, with Northern Ireland. Like, literally, you could be living next door to someone that is seen by the NHS or is training in the NHS, and you're with the HSE. Like, I find that bonkers.
It's wild. It is. I've heard it's easier to access treatment in the NHS. There are, I'm thinking back to people in my master's, so prior to my doctoral training, two people from my master's are currently training at Oxford in the clinical psychology doctoral program. There are lots of people who choose to go the UK route just because there are so many more universities that do offer clinical training programs and counselling psychology doctoral programs. So I very much understand that. Over here in Ireland, we're a much smaller country. Like, we're much smaller. We're 5 million people. That's it.
I was over in Galway for the Irish Psychological Society conference in September, and I absolutely loved it. And I loved that it felt so much smaller.
It is.
Everyone was so friendly. I felt like I was a natural, born Irish woman. Like, everyone was so friendly and chatty, and I was like, "These are my people." Like,
you know? It's one of the perks of being in a smaller country is that we are a smaller network. So you know people who are working just over the border in Wexford. You know people who are working for Jigsaw, which is our young people's mental health service that makes it even easier for people 18 to 26 to access care. You know people who are working in all of these different services. It's very easy to kind of find your feet here in Ireland and to become at home professionally, to be honest. Yeah.
So with the whole Brexit situation, has it made it trickier for people in Ireland to come over to the UK, or is that still as easy or straightforward as it ever was?
As easy as it ever was and will continue to be indefinitely. British universities, to my understanding, are treating Irish applicants as though they're applying from within the UK. So that means that you qualify for, if you're going to a programme that's fee-paying, you qualify for in UK fees, which is great. I'm not sure, because I don't know personally. I haven't actually asked people about kind of whether they're able to take on the role of trainee clinical psychologist. I assume you are if you are Irish, because if you're Irish, you're allowed to work in the UK with no work permit.
Okay, then that would probably meet the threshold then for you to be able to get paid by the NHS. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
All right.
So brilliant. There really is. And there's also British Psychological Society also basically says if you're chartered with the PSI, the Psychological Society of Ireland, it's a really smooth application process to get those qualifications mutually recognised both ways. Because they understand that we have a land border. People drive up and down it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for illuminating that for us.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your early years. You were born in America. When did you When did you move over to Ireland?
So I have only been here for 6 years now. So I was born and raised in America. Sometimes people can't really tell with my accent, but sometimes people, when I say it,
you sound Irish to me rather than American.
I sound in the middle.
Such.
It's kind of in the middle. It's a bit embarrassing on both sides, to be honest.
Okay.
Born and raised in the United States. North Carolina is where I grew up, which is in the South, because that's confusing. And then I went to college in Massachusetts at Mount Holyoke College. Then I took a year to just kind of figure out what I wanted to do, really. I did corporate consulting, kind of found my feet for a little bit, realized that I was not fulfilled.
So did you do psychology in college in America?
So I did a double major. So I did anthropology and I did psychology. So a lot of my anthropological research was doing field work, that kind of stuff. I was in Iceland for about 3 months. And then psychology, I followed what would be your pretty standard psychological training program in the undergrad years. That being said, so when I decided to come on over to Ireland, my wife had actually moved over to Ireland for her doctorate and then went back to America, met me. We were together for a couple of years. And then I went, I want to go to grad school. And she was like, have you thought about Ireland? That's where all my friends in my 20s are. Let's think about it. When I applied for master's programs, I applied to Trinity College Dublin, University College Dublin, and to the University of Edinburgh. Obviously, that one's not in Ireland. I just really like Edinburgh. I think it's a fantastic city. So I applied to those master's programs. Edinburgh said, yes, absolutely, we'd love to have you. UCD went, you have a double major. That means that you didn't study psychology. And I was like, no. I have two BAs. That is what a double major means, is I have two bachelors. I did two at the same time. And then they went, no, that doesn't make sense. So I then asked them, I was like, am I missing any specific courses? And they're like, you have to go to the Psychological Society of Ireland to see if it's the same. So I went to the Psychological Society of Ireland, I contacted them, and I was like, what am I missing here? Because I have all of the courses that are listed as what makes up a psychology bachelor's program. And they were like, well, because you did the both, it's not the same as having done one.
Sure, so it makes you doubly good, doesn't it? That's how I would see that.
You would think. So I was just very confused. Trinity had no issues with it, though. They understood kind of the double major thing. Trinity would have a very large international student population. So I went to do my master's there. And then when I was applying to the doctorate in counselling psychology, they then had me go back to the PSI and be like, but did you actually receive your undergrad? We know you got your master's, but did you get your undergrad? So I knew the president of the Psychological Society of Ireland at the time. Again, very small world in Ireland professionally, which is great in many ways. It's very easy to find your people and to find your feet again. So I happened to know him, and he was like, this is completely fine. Of course you've gotten your bachelor's. He had to write me a letter, though, basically saying that my undergrad counted. And then I was able to do the doctorate. So it's really a story of just different countries having different systems of education. It's very tricky to transfer qualifications from America anywhere else. It's very tricky to transfer qualifications from Ireland or the UK to America. It just doesn't really happen because it's a state by state situation. Because we've completed our training programs in the UK or in Ireland, though, we have more flexibility. There is more understanding, to my understanding, of what those psychology programs entail. So we could go fairly easily to Australia. We could go fairly easily to obviously the UK. Like there's just more flexibility within the Anglophone world if you're not actually training in America, which is very odd.
Yeah, I think the same is true for us. So we could go to New Zealand or Australia relatively easily. But yeah. I think basically if I went to America, I'd have to start again. Like I think that's generally sort of what it would look like.
So during COVID, we suffered a bereavement in the family, and I very much considered going back to America just to be closer to family. I contacted around 10 different states. Just being like, here's what my qualifications are. I have my undergrad, I have my master's, I have my doctorate. Here's what my doctorate was in. Here's exactly how it was received, all that stuff. Here's my professional experience. Here's what I'm doing now. Everything that you would want from a professional portfolio. And again, I'm as terminally qualified as you can be. And I was told in no uncertain terms by one state in particular that they would prefer to have me do an online doctorate program that would cost me $70,000 a year for 6 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that gives us our answer loud and clear, doesn't it? So even though your college education was America, yeah, and you are an American citizen, presumably we're now with dual nationality for Ireland.
Not quite yet, but very soon, yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's just wild, isn't it? Like, come and study for another 6 years and give us all this money, then we might let you.
It's state by state in America, and that's something that people don't often don't recognize. That I just might have stumbled into a particularly stringent state. They also did not accept any electronically delivered files. They said that I would have to bring in everything in paper format. So,
oh wow,
maybe it was just a really tricky state. We'll see. There were two states that looked a little bit more amenable to international qualifications, and those were California and New York, because my theory is that's where people would kind of live.
It's where the movers and the shakers are, my friend.
Well, it's where, let's say, if you have a partner who's in finance, or let's say you have a partner who's involved in film, or if you have a partner in tech, like that's where they would have job opportunities. And of course, there are many job opportunities elsewhere. America has many job opportunities. That's great. But there would be more international movement to kind of the coastal areas generally.
Great. Thank you so much. That's a really, really helpful discussion. And it's not something we've discovered or discussed on the podcast before. Could you tell us a little bit about what you get up to now in your private practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am working in private practice. I've been doing private practice For about a year and a half now. So I finished up my qualifications in 2022, and then I took maternity leave regarding my baby. I worked in assessment work with the adult autism practice for a little bit, and then I opened up my own private practice. So right now I specialize in working with people who are intending to become parents or people who are transitioning to parenthood. So I work specifically with people who are accessing fertility treatment, queer families, honestly, families that are like my own, because I don't know of many other psychologists who have that lived experience. That being said, I work with people who are not queer or who have not accessed fertility treatment. And of course, that work is lovely as well. But that is really the work that is most meaningful to me at this moment, is working with people through matrescence. It typically is femmes. I'm getting a lot of non-gestational parents as well, which is really interesting to work with because there's so little research on non-gestational mothers in particular. There's very little on it. I have a fair few dads who are coming to me as well. The research generally indicates that people want to work with female practitioners, and it's very rare for dads to go, oh, here's a female psychologist who actually has experience of being a non-gestational parent to a child. Wow. So I do one-to-one work. I'm also launching during maternity leave. I want to give a lot of my time back, to be honest. So I'm doing weekly support groups for parents of newborns, completely free of charge for people in Ireland, because it's not available. I'm doing monthly workshops for people who are kind of going through pregnancy or the postnatal period. I'm trying to kind of fill in gaps that I have seen in healthcare and in maternal mental health care in particular. Those solutions are there within our maternity hospitals. Our maternity hospitals have a lot of demands put on them. So if I can provide a solution in the private sector and have it be free, why not?
Well done to you. Sounds like you're doing incredible work, and it made me think about really conscious connection to becoming a parent. And you know, for many, many people, it's something that just happens like that. But even if it does, it's still a lot to get your head around, either during 9 months or when you're waiting to welcome in your bundle of joy to your family. It's a big deal, and it does change lives. And I was in discussion with someone recently about, you know, them not wanting a family, not wanting to be a parent. People can find that really tricky to get their heads around as well, even though it's none of their business. Sometimes people have to or consider accessing counselling for that as well, you know, just to validate their choice to not do that. But I love the idea of what you're doing, which is actually really helping people make space for this massive change. So, you know, I think when people have children very young, I find in the clinical work I do that they've not really finished having their own youth themselves. One of my best friends would fully say that she was not done being a young person when she was then a mother. I think she had her son at like 21 or something. Sometimes people become in a position where they almost miss that they haven't had that, you know, and they weren't really ready to stop that journey. And so, you know, I think it is a big change going from being either single or in a committed relationship and then becoming a parent. It's a massive change.
And what I see, I completely agree with you. What I see so much is that it's not a supportive change. That people have these scripts for how parenthood and family life should go. And those scripts hinge on having a supportive family environment. They hinge on having people around you and your friend network who understand what's going on. But there's a huge shift in even those friendship connections. Your whole life changes, the demands on your time change, your physical resources change, you have less sleep, you might be nourishing your body differently, your movement needs might be changing. All of those things that really underpin mental well-being get shaken up. So it gets really, really tricky. There are many people who are working in the matrescence space and in the transition to parenthood space. One thing that I feel really passionate about and I don't see a lot of people doing is including fertility and trying to conceive within that maternal mental health space. Because many people, as they're accessing fertility treatment, they will experience very high highs. They will experience very low lows. There's loss. There's trauma history inherent to it. There's so much to reproductive trauma and fertility treatment would be considered clinically reproductive trauma. Even if fertility intervention is not experienced as capital T trauma, it would be considered reproductive trauma generally, as would loss, as would miscarriage, as would all of these other things that so many people do experience on their pathways to becoming parents, and that affect their parenting and their experience with their family. That being said, there is not readily available mental health care support for people going through fertility treatment or trying to conceive. It's only really when people conceive that all of a sudden there's this, oh, you're in a maternity hospital. Oh, there's a lovely perinatal mental health team that's here to support you. I just don't see the fertility support being there as needed.
Absolutely.
And that's changing.
It's so important. Yeah.
It's available in some private clinics, but it's not necessarily offered to every couple. But I would argue that every couple should be getting fairly regular support if they're going through fertility treatment.
Yeah. It was only, I think, recently, I'm 42 currently, it was only on your recent social media post, I'm sure it was you, that I learned of the word matrescence. It was not something I had heard of. It was not something I could spell. Could you A, spell it for our audience, and B, tell us what it is?
Absolutely. So matrescence. So it's adolescence, which is the transition to adulthood, right? It's like that. Matrescence is the transition to motherhood. It basically is a word that encapsulates the massive hormonal, physical, lifestyle shifts that you're experiencing as you transition to having children. Typically, it is only targeted at mums and mums who were pregnant, because it does consider hormonal shifts, it does consider physical shifts in terms of the postnatal body and all the identity changes that might come with that, and the body image concerns that many people have postnatally. There isn't really a word for patrescence.
No patrescence.
There is patrescence, but I mean, so there's so little space, in my opinion, for men to come together and share experiences of fatherhood. It's very limited in social media. And that's because a lot of the default labor goes to women generally and to mothers. So there's very little available for patrescence. I have no idea what the word would be for a general gender neutral essence for people who are turning into parents.
Maybe you should coin it. Maybe that should be your thing. If people are interested in learning more about you and whether you do ever coin that term, where can they find you on socials, Laura?
So I am at The Gentle Psychologist on Instagram. That is where I kind of do everything. I have not downloaded TikTok. I think I'm too old to do it. But The Gentle Psychologist is where I am. I'm also on LinkedIn under my name, which is very unique. Thank you to my mother for that branding and for the impossible name. But that's okay.
Say it once more for us. Say your beautiful name, because I fluffed it up at least four times in a row when we first were doing the intro.
It's Dr. Leora de Flumery. De Flumery, it sounds like a sneeze, but that's okay.
I will make sure that I link to all of this beautiful content and advice in my show notes. But before we finish, have you got your best piece of advice for aspiring psychologists to reduce burnout on their way to where they're getting to?
Know why you want to do it and know what program you want to do. I often have people come to me through a lot of like LinkedIn messages, actually, which is interesting. I have people come to me saying, why did you do a counseling psychology doctoral program? For me, the counseling modality was so radical and so impactful that it really kept me going through the application process. I love that counseling psychology is about putting people in their context, and that it has an activism component to it, that it has this understanding of the systemic factors that underpin mental health concerns. I absolutely love it. I find it so deeply feminist in its approach, while also obviously being incredibly evidence-based. I love it. I don't know that I would have been able to go through what I see so many people going through of those years of applying to doctoral programs for some people, if it wasn't a program that I went, oh my God, I can see everything of myself in it. Write about why you want to do it. write about why you want to do a doctoral program and not a psychotherapy program. Understand why you don't want to be a social worker, but why you want to be a psychologist. Understand what the doctoral part gives you. Do you want to do assessment work? Do you want to do research work? Do you want to do writing? Understand what all of it is, because without that, you'll be sitting there going, why didn't I do the minimum in order to work therapeutically with people?
That's so
important. Long road.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your beautiful compassion with us so generously. It's been a real delight speaking to you and wishing you the very best of luck with everything that comes for you next as you become a family of four very soon too.
Yes, we have a baby incoming next week. Yep, thank you so much. It's been absolutely lovely speaking to you, and I look forward to continuing to see what you're up to. This platform is so needed. I will absolutely be sharing it around Ireland as well.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really kind of you. It's really lovely to meet you. Do stay in touch.
Absolutely. I will do. All right. Bye-bye, Marianne.
What an absolute pleasure it was to speak to Dr. Leora. I hope that you found it a really interesting listen as well. Please do go and follow her as The Gentle Psychologist on Instagram. Post some lovely content. So, you know, there's lots to continue to learn and appreciate there too. I think if I was an aspiring psychologist and I was footloose and fancy free, I loved Ireland when I was there in Galway. I might well have considered going and training there as either a clinical or a counselling psychologist if they would have had me, especially now that we learn that it is actually a paid opportunity now in Ireland for counselling psychology. So maybe this gives us hope that there is change possible counselling psychology in the UK. Have you got any ideas for a podcast episode that you think would be really interesting? Please do get in contact with me. Please do pitch it to me. I will look forward to bringing the next episode of the Aspiring Psychologist podcast, which you can access usually at about 10 a.m. on Saturdays on YouTube, with each brand new MP3 version being available from 6 a.m. on Mondays. Take care. Thank you so much for being part of my world.
If you're looking to become a psychologist, then let this be your guide. This podcast at your side, you'll be on your way to being qualified. It's the Aspiring Psychologist Podcast with Dr. Marianne Trent.
Hi, my name is Beth and I'm a psychological wellbeing practitioner from Newcastle. I just wanted to say the biggest thank you to the contributors of the Clinical Psychologist Collective book. I've enjoyed reading this so much and loved having an insight into the range of backgrounds and experiences people have prior to applying for the doctorate. And it's been really interesting seeing the potential barriers to the application as well and how I can try and work around this. I really started to doubt myself and whether I was good enough to apply for the clinical psychology doctorate, but this has really given me the confidence boost that I needed to give it a shot. So the biggest thank you ever.